Hello, Juno. Welcome to Monday, May 13th edition of Juno Afternoon. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. We've got a very interesting show today. We have Special Agent Frank Bonadonna, who will give us the details on this week's observance of National Police Week and Wednesday's Memorial. Marie Darlin and Jane Lindsay will be here to highlight Tuesday's Juno History Workshop at the City Museum. We'll also be talking with Colette Casa about what's going on at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. And we'll meet the new executive chef at the Silver Bow Inn, Miss Jenny Rizzo. As for the weather, right now it's patchy fog, rain tonight, patchy fog in the morning, rain showers for the rest of the week. Up next, National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A South Dakota school board will decide tonight whether to approve a request for a Native American honor song at graduation. The board has denied such requests in the past, despite a large Native population. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbold reports.
The small town of Chamberlain, South Dakota, is just south of the Crow Creek and Lower Brule reservations. St. Joseph Indian School sends residents of high school age to the public school in Chamberlain. For a second straight year, the school board in Chamberlain has been asked to include a Native honor song at graduation. They turned the proposal down in 2012. The school superintendent says the district wants to keep its traditional public school service intact. Lorraine Wooster teaches Native American studies at St. Joseph. She says she'd like more explanation from the board.
If it's no because it has to do with prayer, let's address that. Because there are honor songs that are sung that don't have prayer words in them. And there are many. There are honor songs that are just vocables and chants that don't have any words. So that can be left out.
Wooster says Chamberlain has very good relations between whites and Native people, despite the person making the request saying the denial was racially motivated. Chamberlain's graduation is scheduled for Sunday. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
More than a year ago, six congressmen directed the Bureau of Indian Affairs to address South Dakota's standards of enforcement of the Indian Child Welfare Act. In response, the BIA is holding a summit this week in Rapid City. Tribes objected to the summit's agenda, saying it was inadequate to find solutions. But as Victoria Wicks reports, the agency has now agreed to make changes to the meeting after efforts by tribal officials.
Jesse Takenalive is a councilman at Standing Rock. He says his tribe sent a letter to congressmen and BIA asking for a more effective summit.
With regard to the agenda that the Bureau has put out, in our view, it doesn't go to the core of the solution.
The tribe has received assurances that the agenda will provide more time for former foster children and their parents to tell their stories. Tribal leaders want to take control over welfare programs for their own children, but they say they can't afford to do that right now. In the meantime, they say federal money goes to the South Dakota Department of Social Services, which puts Native children into white foster homes and institutions in violation of the Indian Child Welfare Act. Brian Brewer is president of the Oglala Sioux Tribe.
I would really like to show the federal government how this money is being spent, how we are losing our children, how the state really isn't looking out for the best interest of our children, and I would love to see the funds taken away from the state of South Dakota.
The State Department of Social Services issued a statement that the BIA did not contact that agency or invite its representatives to attend the summit. The BIA did not respond to a request for an interview. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
U.S. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski's Veteran Spotlight Project was recognized last week at an event at the Library of Congress. It was highlighted as a model of best practices. The project is an effort to share the oral accounts of war from veterans. It was launched last Memorial Day and includes Alaska Natives and other Alaskans. A team of business groups in Canada announced today that nominations are open for a leadership award. The Aboriginal Business Leadership Award recognizes a First Nation entrepreneur for success in a forest products business. According to the Forest Products Association of Canada, the forest products industry is the largest employer for First Nation workers. Nominations are being accepted through July. The winner will be announced this fall. The Fort McDowell Yavapai Nation in Arizona celebrates Sovereignty Day each May. In the early 1990s, tribes were negotiating gaming compacts with the state. On May 12, 1992, federal agents raided the tribe's casino and seized gaming machines. Tribal members blocked the road and kept agents from taking the machines. After a three-week standoff, Arizona's governor signed a compact. The tribe has since recognized the day as a holiday. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. I'm in the studio this afternoon with Special Agent Frank Bonadonna. He is one of the representatives from the Alaska Peace Officers Association, and there are some events going on to honor local police and also participate in National Police Week, Memorial Week. Hi, how are you?
Hey, Joan, how you doing?
I'm great.
Great.
So let's talk a little bit about what's going on this week in Juneau.
Okay. Well, May 15th is designated as National Police Officers Day. That was by President Kennedy back in 1962. So by way of commemoration, we have two services going on this Wednesday. The first one is noon at Evergreen Cemetery downtown, and that's going to be a wreath-laying ceremony that we do every year on the grave of Officer Richard Adair, who was murdered in the line of duty in 1979. The second service, which is a bit larger, but both are open to the public, is going to be at the Juneau Police Department at 6 p.m., and that's going to include a screening of the movie Heroes Behind the Badge, which was produced by the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial, which honors police officers that have been killed in the line of duty, and also explores how their deaths and their service has affected their families, and their communities, and their colleagues. It's a very moving movie.
Yeah, that sounds great. How long is the film? I assume you've seen it.
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm. It's about an hour. Runs about a little over now, about an hour and 15 minutes. It'll be preceded by the flag raising just outside the Juneau Police, and it'll be closed with taps and a performance by the City of Juneau Pipe Band. There'll be food afterwards. It's actually been donated by the Breeze Inn. And flowers that we're going to put on Officer Adair's grave have been donated by Martha's Flowers. So
wow.
Thank you very much to both of those companies for their continued support to the Alaska Peace Officers Association.
Right. It sounds like a wonderful opportunity to honor both the fallen police officers and also the police officers who protect us every day.
Absolutely.
Can we talk a little bit about National Police Week? So this is what's happening here in Juneau, mm-hmm. but what's the larger view?
Well, this is something that happens in communities all over the country. There'll be a similar service in Anchorage, and there's ones in small and large towns all over the country during that week. Like I said, May 15th is designated as Police Officers Day, but the week in which it falls is National Police Week. The largest ceremonies, of course, occurring in Washington, D.C., around the National Police Officers Memorial. And that event attracts anywhere from 25,000 to 45,000 people a year. And it is on the calendar of law enforcement, it's a pretty big one. Most departments, including Juneau Police Department, send people to participate in those ceremonies each year. And during that time, the names of all the police officers that have been killed in the line of duty in the last 12 months are placed on the wall, which is in the National Police Officers Memorial, which has the unfortunate designation of being the only memorial in Washington, D.C. that will never be finished.
Must be very moving to be part of
it. It is. I actually visited just a few months ago, It's very unassuming where it lays in Washington, D.C. You know, it's surrounded by office buildings and government buildings. You don't really know you're in it until you're in it. And then you look around, you just see the thousands upon thousands, 19,000 names and change that are there. You can see the ones that are very old, going back all the way to the 18th century, and the ones that are brand new.
Wow, that must be really moving.
It is.
To be part of that, like, living memorial, living mm-hmm. and ongoing memorial.
Absolutely.
But here in Juneau, so let's talk about one more time. So mm-hmm. on Wednesday at noon, let's talk a little bit about this ceremonial at the cemetery.
Sure.
So you were talking a little bit about each year there's a wreath put on
On Richard Adair's grave, yeah. Right. Officer Richard Adair was murdered in Line 2, like I said, 1979 here in Juneau. He was shot in the head by a subject who later on committed suicide before he was able to be apprehended. And he's buried at Evergreen Cemetery, and each year we place a wreath on his grave. And curiously enough, the wreath that we put on his grave, while the flowers and the decorations are new, but the actual wreath itself, the structure upon which you put those flowers, is the same exact wreath that was put on his grave at his funeral in 1979. So that's something that we hope Rick kind of appreciates that we do for him every year. And it's a way for us in law enforcement and also members of the public to never forget the sacrifice that he made, and with hopes that we never have to celebrate anything like that ever again. But we will each year, and it's a way to remind ourselves of that sacrifice.
Right. And then in the evening, there's that film at 6 o'clock, and Chief of Police will say a few words.
Yeah, Chief Browning, who will be retiring here at the end of the month, as well as Deputy Chief Paige Decker. But Chief Browning will say a couple of words to welcome everyone. We don't have a keynote speaker this year, as we have in years past. There will be some words also offered by Lieutenant Stephen Hall of the Alaska State Troopers, as the state troopers lost a trooper and a public safety, a village public safety officer also this year. So he'll be saying some words, and then after, like I said, an introduction to flag raising at the flagpole, we're going to go inside to a room in JPD and watch the video Heroes Behind the Badge. So the JPD Honor Guard will be there. Adrian Sipek, whose mother is an employee of JPD, and she's a trumpeter. She's very talented. She's going to play taps. The City of Juneau Pipe Band will be there to play Amazing Grace. So it will be a beautiful ceremony. I can guarantee that.
It sounds like a great opportunity to be a part of the community and also honor the people that
Absolutely.
Make us a safe community.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Driving my way. If you break the law, you'll hear from me. I know I'm a working for the state. I'm the highway patrol. Well, you'll know me when you see me, cause my door's painted white with my siren and screaming and my flashing red light. I work all day and I work all night just to keep a law and order, trying to do what's right. If I write you out a ticket, then you better drive slow. I'm just doing my job. I'm the highway patrol. Job, I'm the highway patrol. Shouldn't do. You can bet your boots I'm coming after you. If you want to race, then get on a racetrack. Well, if you try to run away, I'm going to bring you back. I'm here to keep all the speeders driving slow. I'm just doing my job. I'm the highway patrol. I'm the highway patrol. Job, I'm the highway patrol. I'm just doing my job.
I'm the highway patrol.
That was Junior Brown singing Highway Patrol. And you are listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. Here in the studio, we have Jane Lindsay of the City Museum and Marie Darlin, a tour guide of the City Museum. And we welcome you both.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So Marie is doing a walking tour through the Juneau Douglas City Museum tomorrow night at 5:30. Space is limited. You're encouraged to give a call and reserve your spot. It's $20 to join the tour. So let's talk a little bit, Marie, about what the tour is about.
Well, the tour is just kind of a tour through Juneau, talking about people, places, and buildings, and then putting in the history, too, at the same time.
Okay. So, Marie, you were born here, right?
Yes.
So I guess you've seen a lot of changes in your time.
That's true, yes.
I've been here 15 years. I've seen a lot of changes. So do you have a favorite building?
Well, not really. There's a history that goes with a lot of the different buildings. I think one of my favorites, maybe, although we don't spend an awful lot of time talking about it, is the Governor's Mansion, because there's quite a history there. And so, and another one that has a lot of history with it is the Wickersham House. So it's, we go out towards the Governor's Mansion, and then usually with our tour during the day, not at this 5:30 one, we go on the state office building and talk about from both sides of the building where you have places that you can look out and talk about a lot of the history of Juneau. But being as how the building closes at 6 o'clock, we don't want to get locked in or out, so we're going to just walk towards the Governor's Mansion and talk about what we see from there, then come back, go across on 4th, talk about a couple of different people along there that's part of the history of Juneau. China Joe is one, and the Birdman of Alcatraz is another. Talk about the different churches and buildings there, then go up Gold Street, and then we stop and talk briefly about the Orthodox Church, all the buildings across Fifth Street, then the schools, and all of that, and we end up at the Capitol Inn, actually, which is on the very end of Fifth Street there.
That's right, right on top of where the construction is going on right now,
right.
I think. So, Marie, you alluded that, this is a tour, that this is an ongoing tour that usually takes place during the day, and this is a special event, an evening tour? So do you do daily tours?
The City Museum does 3 tours a week at 1:30 every day, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And it's the same tour, actually.
Okay. And you're doing a special evening tour. Is there a reason that there's a special evening tour? Do you do this at the beginning of tour season?
The beginning of the tour season, really. It's something that Jane makes the arrangements for, different tour groups and all that maybe want to have some of their guides.
Okay, Jane, you want to talk a little bit
about that? Joan, we normally at the beginning of May when the summer season starts, we try to provide good history for tour guide providers, just people in general. That's what we do. So we thought this year let's offer the walking tour in the evening because some folks can't do it during the week. So that's kind of the impetus behind that. It's really popular. People really enjoy it. They especially enjoy going with Marie, who is very modest. She really is amazing with Juneau history, and she just gives a great tour of the area and the stories she knows, and she knows them very well. So
that sounds great. So it's $20. And I'm assuming it's $20 Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday during the day as well?
That is correct.
Okay. And so if you have friends and family coming in, it sounds like a tour that you want to take with your friends and family because it sounds like it would really give you a deeper knowledge of what's going on, like, you know, the Seattle Underground and all the different tours, walking tours. Marie, how long have you been doing this tour?
Since we started on what, 5 or so years ago?
5 or 6 years ago, we developed it, and it's kind of been changing. We used to go down on Front Street and realized that it was very busy. You couldn't really have an intimate conversation. So actually, Marie helped us really refocus, and then our other tour guide volunteer, Joel, who is, you know, a volunteer, he volunteers with the museum, and we're now kind of on the just around the museum, whereas we used to walk down the hill. But we find that you can tell even more history because it's so rich. So they actually go over, when she was talking about going to the state office building, it's so you can look across the channel and give people a perspective of Treadwell, of the mining days. And often folks have never been here before. So again, you just give them that visual, and then they can see the Governor's Mansion and whatnot. But I went on the tour a couple weeks ago, and it's like everything here in Juneau. You think you've heard it all, but I was like, really? I didn't know that. Really? You know, so it's pretty fun. I would encourage all longtime history buffs and Junoites to consider going on it again, as well as people who have never heard much about Juneau history at all or have been to Juneau. This is their first visit.
Well, that sounds great.
That's always interesting for me if we have local people who go on the tour, because they have so much to add to it also, you know, what it was like when they got here, whenever that was, and different things that they add. So having local people on the tour, too, is really interesting.
It sounds great. So tomorrow night, 5:30 at the City Museum to take this walking tour with Marie and Darlin. Marie, how long does the tour last?
About 2 hours.
About 2 hours. And do you have a little story? You have a little story you want to share, or do people have to come on the tour?
Well, not really. We have so much to talk about that it's hard to work it all into 2 hours.
I bet. And how many people do you take on the tour?
Well, last time I had 6. And we try to keep it maybe around 10 or a little more. If it gets to be too much, it's too hard, really, to talk to everybody and get everybody involved.
That's right. That sounds great. So that's tomorrow at 5:30. If you can't do that, it's happening Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But this is something you need to call in and make a reservation, or can you just show up?
You can actually just show up if you like, and you can call and make a reservation. We always have someone that's available to take folks on the tour at 1:30 Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. If you'd like to make special arrangements, we can do that, but then please call us and we'll see what we can do. Basically, because we do take people through the Russian Orthodox Church, we probably won't be tomorrow because we don't have that much time, but you can always go back and visit, and then we can donate to the church, which is very good. And then, so we usually call them. They know our schedule if it's something outside of our normal Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then the Capitol Inn, we always call too. So they're expecting us to drop by. I was wondering, Marie, do you tell the empty chair story?
I do.
That's a great story,
yes,
and that's pretty relevant right now.
Go across on 5th on the school, you know, with all the schools there and all. And, yes, we talk about the empty chair.
Do you want to tell us about it now?
Well, this has to do with the Japanese internment during World War II and the fact that we had a graduate in the spring of 42, John Tanaka, who was valedictorian of his class, and the superintendent decided, since he would not be here for the commencement exercises, that he would have a special one for John, which he did, presented him his certificate and all that. And then at our commencement in May, he had an empty chair on the platform, which was for John. And that's where the empty chair project has come from, because we now have some children of that family who now are working on some kind of a commemoration for the Japanese people who were interned from Juneau and returned to Juneau.
And the reason that story is very important on the walk is because there's going to be a sculpture, a monument in memory of at Capitol School. So you walk through that area. And
in the Capitol School Park, which is now being redesigned kind of up there, there's going to be a spot for the empty chair.
That's a great story. So everyone should give a call to the museum right now and reserve your spot. What is the number to call?
586-3572.
Right. And if you just joined us, you're listening to Juneau Afternoon. Jane Lindsay and Marie Darlin from the City Museum are in the studio. And Marie does tours, not necessarily all the time. I don't think if you show up Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you'll get Marie. But for tomorrow night at 5:30, you will. So it's definitely
Wednesday is my day. We have one of the staff of the City Museum who does one of the tours, and then Joel, who's one of our volunteers, who takes Thursday. So
that's right. You can get through the week. You'll get a different perspective of the same pathway.
That sounds great. Jane, is there anything else you want to add? Do you have any, like, summer kid programs coming up, or is that not set up yet?
You know, we don't have anything in the works now. We do Juneau Explorers in August, but that's a ways away. We are pretty proud. We just opened our summer season, and our very own Jeff Brown is the subject of an exhibit up there, which I would encourage everybody to come and see. It's gotten rave reviews. The title is Jeff Brown's, what is it? Masterpieces of Merriment. I wanted to say Minister of Merriment, that too. And then we also have Dan Fruit's new works. So we have two really fabulous temporary exhibits up, and then just the rest of our galleries are always worth coming to see. And there's a hands-on room for children, so children are always welcome in the back hands-on mining room.
Okay, and for those of you who don't know it, so I'm your Monday host, but Jeff's my engineer, and Jeff's here in the studio with us. So if the show sounds good, it's because of him. If anything goes wrong, it's me. But anyway, Jane, what are the hours for the museum so people can go check out Jeff's exhibit and everything else that's going on?
Sure. We're open 7 days a week, so Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And admission is $6 for adults, $5 for seniors, and children 12 and under are free. And we encourage everyone to be a friend of the Juno Douglas City Museum and get in for free, and or get a admissions pass, an annual pass. That's $20, and that allows the pass holder and a guest unlimited entries for a year.
Okay, sounds great. And what's the number again to call
sure.
to sign up for Maurice Tour tomorrow at 10:30?
Yeah, absolutely. 586-3572.
Great. Thank you, ladies, for coming today.
Okay. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 13th of May, 2013. It's the birthday of the novelist Daphne du Maurier, born in London, 1907, spent most of her adult life in Cornwall, where her three most famous novels are set, Jamaica Inn, Frenchman's Creek, and Rebecca. It was on this day in 1373 the mystic Julian of Norwich received the last of her divine visions. She was 31 years old. She was a female hermit, an anchoress, lived alone, not in a community, as a nun. It was a dramatic time in England in the late 14th century. The Black Death had killed at least a third of the population. There was famine, crop failures. The Catholic Church was falling apart. England was at war with France. And Julian of Norwich decided to withdraw from society for a life of religious solitude. She became seriously ill. She was near death, and then suddenly she began experiencing visions. She had 16 visions of God, and she was healed. These visions went into her book, Revelations of Divine Love, one of the first books written by a woman in English. She wrote, "So I understood our sensuality is founded in nature, in mercy and in grace, and this foundation enables us to receive gifts which lead us to endless life. For I saw very surely that our substance is in God, and I also saw that God is in our sensuality. For God is never out of the soul, in which he will dwell blessedly without end." It was on this day in 1940 Winston Churchill gave his first speech as Prime Minister to the House of Commons. He had taken over as Prime Minister 3 days earlier. He gave the speech in which he said, "I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat. We have before us an ordeal of the most grievous kind. We have before us many, many long months of struggle and of suffering. You ask, what is our aim? I can answer in one word, it is victory. Victory at all costs. Victory in spite of all terror. Victory, however long and hard the road may be. For without victory, there is no survival." And it was on this day in 1958 that Velcro was patented by a Swiss electrical engineer, Georges de Mestral, based on his observation of the thistly plant burdock and the spiny seeds or burrs that latch onto anything. The word Velcro combined the French word velours, meaning velvet, and crochet, meaning hook. Here's a poem for today by William Matthews, Iowa City to Boulder. "I take most of the drive by night. It's cool. And in the dark, My lapsed inspection can't be seen. I sing and make myself promises. By dawn on the high plains, I'm driving tired and cagey, red-winged blackbirds on the mileposts like candle flames flare their wings for balance in the blasts of truck wakes. The dust of not sleeping drifts in my mouth, and 5 or 6 miles slur by uncounted. I say I hate long-distance drives, but I love them. The flat light stains the foothills pale, and I speed up the canyon to sleep until the little lull the insects take at dusk before they say their names all night in the loud field. William Matthews's poem, Iowa City to Boulder, from his collection Search Party, published by Houghton Mifflin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, helping professionals and businesses look their best when people search for them online. Learn more at 1-800-REPUTATION. Produced by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hello, Juno. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is my engineer. And in the studio right now, we have Richard Dowling, a Juno Jazz and Classic musician who is up here, who's collaborating with the Goldtown Nickelodeon tonight and playing out at Chapel by the Lake with Paul Rosenthal and Evan Drachman Thursday at 7:30. And we also have our very own Colette Costa. Welcome to the studio.
Sound of wild applause.
Thank you, Colette. So, Colette, let's talk about what's going on at the Goldtown tonight.
Let's do that.
Okay.
What a great idea. So we're continuing our series of the not-so-silent films, which are awesome. They're my favorite thing I've ever done outside of things I can't say on the air.
Thank you for not saying.
Yeah. Anyway, so we have... The whole idea is that we have classic silent movies that are paired up with live musicians who play the score to the film while the film is playing. And they do this all over down south, but I think this is our fourth one now. We actually just finished one. And it's a wonderful series. It's a great way to get people to watch silent movies, which some people might think are not very interesting, but the one we're playing tonight is called Safety Last. It's one of the great silent comedies with Harold Lloyd. And it's hysterical, it's totally family-friendly, and if you've never given them a chance, I can't recommend coming to one of these enough. I mean, you have, it's a concert and a movie, and it's a heck of a night
out.
And
popcorn.
Right.
Popcorn.
But the thing is, you don't have to take Colette's word for it. The 6:30 is sold out, so, like, it's done. But they added an 8 o'clock show, and Richard Dowling, a pianist, a classical and ragtime pianist, is actually going to be playing the vintage piano at the Goldtown Nickelodeon.
That's right. That's become vintage. My new favorite euphemism here.
So, Richard, have you...
Vintage piano.
Yes, vintage. Have you done this before?
I have not actually played for a silent movie before, but I've attended a lot of performances accompanied by a good friend of mine in San Francisco who specializes in this sort of thing. I play at all the ragtime and early jazz festivals around the country, and he and I play two pianos together very often at these festivals. And I've been in attendance many times when he's accompanied silent films. So I know how to do it. Just nobody's ever asked me until Colette came along. So now we're fast friends.
Sweet.
And I can tell you, everything she said is absolutely right on the money. It is going to be so much fun. The music that I'm going to play, Ragtime, is the perfect accompaniment to this kind of a film. It's slapstick. It's actually a little bit nail-biting. Mr. Lloyd climbs the side of a skyscraper, and it's a little bit edge of the seat, and it's just going to be a lot of fun. It just runs a little over an hour, and as you said earlier, the 6:30 show is already sold out. So Colette decided to add an 8 p.m. tonight. So we've got tickets available online and by phone. And
okay.
I'm sure Colette will give you those specifics here in a second.
We're going to get to that in a minute. But first we have to say, so we have this world-class musician who's here for the Juno Jazz and Classics, who's going to come and do this silent, maybe you've always wanted to do, you just had to be asked. But not only is he probably, I've not heard him, but I suspect he is probably a fantastic musician.
He's pretty good.
And he's a good sport.
Yeah.
My goodness, he's
yeah.
a good sport.
He's all right.
And that piano, I was just at the Gold Town yesterday. That piano is going to be like smoking tonight. So
it
you
is.
Have to go check this out. But how do you score one of those few tickets at 8 o'clock?
Well, you can go online. I've got online tickets at, the easiest thing is probably to go to our website, Gold Town Nick, or just Google us. It'll come right up. And there's a link on there, or if you can remember, it's brownpapertickets.com. And just type, not so silent into the search engine. It'll come right up. You could also come, if you want to come by the theater before 8 o'clock, you can probably grab one. I think they're only on sale online till about 5 o'clock. But definitely you want to get there before 8. Don't go there now because I'm on the radio, so I'm not there.
Are you sure you're really on, yeah. on the live Juno afternoon
really,
right now? I'm not sure if it's you.
Yeah, it's close.
Okay.
I knew there was two of you running around town.
A doppelganger. And we have, I literally just opened up sales on that, and we've already smoked through about 15 or 20 of those tickets.
And how many seats are there?
Oh, on a cold day, we can shove 85 people in there. But
tonight?
It's pretty cold.
With this weather?
It's pretty cold. You're not going to need a blanket.
Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be tight.
So, Richard, you've been coming up to Juno with Juno Jazz and Classics for 4 years?
This is my second Juno Jazz and Classics Festival, but I've also come to perform independently with Evan Drachman and with Linda Rosenthal.
Oh, great. Great.
And I've played other places in the state as well. Evan and I just went out to Tenneke Springs and gave a recital two nights ago.
Oh, that must have been great.
It was great. It was one of the good weather days flying out. Coming back, we were swimming in that seaplane. So I was happy to get back to civilization.
You were happy you really weren't swimming in that swim place, because here you are.
People I was telling back home, they were like, oh, be careful. I said, a seaplane is the safest mode of transportation around here, because you've got plenty of places to land.
It's true. That's a good point.
Planes with wheels aren't so safe.
You also don't have a whole lot of control over that safe thing. Just sort of make sure your pilot's older than you. That's my rule of thumb. He's not older than me, I don't get on.
Really?
Well, that gets harder to find.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's a whole other conversation. But let's get back to the Not-So-Silent Films. Worth having. You should come back just to talk about that. So the Not-So-Silent Films, it's been going on at the Gold Town Nickelodeon for, this is the fourth or fifth one. Tonight is supposed to be a real nail-biter, okay?
It is.
And live music.
Yeah, so Harold Lloyd was sort of the third part of the triangle of the great silent comedians, not including Fatty Arbuckle, but, Chaplin, Keaton, and Lloyd, and he's kind of the lesser known of those three. But he had a huge career. He made a bunch of movies. He was also, like Keaton, he was very well known for doing a lot of his own stunts. He was incredibly athletic, and you'll see him, he's jumping on trains, and he's jumping off of trolley cars, and, things that look very easy, but certainly weren't. And the timing for some of these stunts is really impeccable. And when it's mixed with a really vivacious score, you really, it's almost transcendental. It really is. You're just placed into that time period. And these movies were so beautifully made to start with that the little bits and bobs, like he gets a note where he's getting his pay. It's like 6 days' pay. Was it like $15?
Right,
and
per
he's
day.
So happy. I don't know. It's. I'm a total geek about silent movies, but they're much cooler than the way I make them sound. So.
And it's not Oliver Stone length. It doesn't go 3 hours.
I think it's 70. It's 75 minutes. So look, I've had a bunch of people call for the 6:30, and when I say the 6:30 sold out, I say you can go to the 8. They're like, oh, thanks. Look, at 8 o'clock, you'll be home before 9:30. Okay, unless you live like Lena Loop, then you'll be home at 9:75. But really, you're not going to die if you go to bed at 9:15, okay? Come out and see the movie. It's not going to happen again. He's leaving soon. Done.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, that's the short version. The slightly longer one is, I think you should go listen to Richard Dowling play, and I want to see that piano in action. And
good.
I also want to see the film. So I have to get off the air and get a babysitter. So anyway, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
bird note. The names of birds can tell stories. We're hearing the song of the salmonberry bird, the name indigenous Northwest coastal people gave to the bird known in English as the Swainson's thrush. The salmonberry bird's name comes from its annual arrival in forests across northern regions of the continent in May, when salmonberries ripen. The native names of birds sometimes distill the essence of their appearance or behavior. In the Cherokee language, for instance, the meadowlark is called star because of the way the bird's tail spreads out when it soars. The Cherokee name for nuthatch is deaf, possibly because of the bird's disregard for the presence of humans. The names of birds in native languages express a long affiliation between people and place. As the writer Nancy Lord observes, words have power. Languages connected to place help us respect local knowledge, to ask and answer the tough questions about how the human and the non-human can live together in a tolerant and dignified way. The song of the salmonberry bird reminds us of the abiding connection between birds and people and the nourishment nature provides us both. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Tickets are on sale for Juno Jazz and Classics Grand Finale, Booker T, Centennial Hall on May 18th. Singer-songwriter, legendary organ player, and former frontman for the MGs, it's no wonder he's earned a Grammy for Lifetime Achievement. There's timelessness to his music, bluesy, gusty, and soon, live in Juno. More info at jazzandclassics.org. Music, magic. Don't miss it. This message brought to you by Juno Jazz and Classics.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Tomorrow night, we've got Mud Rooms, and we're going to go and hear an excerpt of one from the past.
Our next speaker is Rory Watt.
Hi, I'm David Freudberg from Humankind. Each week we present the voices of humanitarians. They are people who offer solutions, not just problems, who dedicate their words and their efforts to building a future with more compassion, nonviolence, and generosity of spirit. They're provocative people whose stories are inspiring. Join us for Humankind.
Thursday nights at 7 on KTOO News.
Hello, you've been listening to Juno Afternoon. Sorry about that little technical difficulty, but things are up and running again. We have Jill Ramil, the owner of Silver Boat Inn, and her new chef, Jenny Rizzo, in the studio. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi, Joan. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah. So, Jenny, you are coming, you're trained at Le Cordon Bleu. You're coming from Orzo's in Anchorage in the Tokitna Lodge. Welcome to Juno.
Why, thank you.
So you've been here a couple of months, correct?
Oh, yeah, I got here end of February.
That's great. And so you used to live up in Anchorage or up in Talkeetna?
Both. I moved from Chicago suburbs up to Anchorage before moving up to Talkeetna. And then I lived up in Talkeetna for about 2 years, moved back down to Anchorage, talked to Jill, jumped on a ferry and came down to Juneau.
Well, another Alaskan story. Great. We're happy to have you here. So, Jill, you have a new chef. You're expanding your catering options, your menu. What's going on?
Exactly, all of the above. We are expanding catering options. We are expanding daily menu options. Like, we have new weekly specials that we're rolling out right now. Like, today, probably it sounds really awesome. Today's Monday, so we have matzo ball Mondays.
Oh, that sounds great.
Doesn't that sound good on a rainy day?
It does.
And we have Tuesday, we have taco salads, and we're making sourdough bread bowls every week now. And it's sort of with Jenny's experience and her skill set as a cook and as a manager, it's going to enable us to do a lot of things I couldn't do before.
Oh, that sounds great. So, Jenny, what do you think about Juno?
Definitely rainy.
Rainy, but those nice days are pretty nice.
Pretty awesome. I haven't gotten a chance to get out too much around Juno, but what I have downtown and stuff, I'm really enjoying it so far.
Okay. So you studied at Le Cordon Bleu. You've worked in some great restaurants, and if anyone goes up to Anchorage on a regular basis, you know, it's always somebody stops at Orzo or the Glacier Brew Pub, and you were the pastry chef for both of those. Is that true?
I was one of the pastry chefs. I worked under the executive pastry chef, and he kind of taught me a whole lot of stuff, took me under his wing. I had mostly savory background. So Jeff Lekomsky, who was the pastry chef at Orso at the time, took me under his wing, taught me a lot of stuff, and I have been able to carry that through my career.
That sounds great. So is that your passion? Would you say that pastries are your passion? Do you have one area that is more exciting than the others?
No, I would say food is kind of my passion. I enjoy both sweet and savory, and working at Silver Boat gives me the opportunity to work with both every day.
That sounds great. So do you have a lot of master plans boiling as far as what's going to be coming out the pike? Or?
Oh, there's so many things in my brain and in the works that we've been talking about and stuff. So you will definitely see some new menu items coming up, and also some new catering items.
That sounds great. So it sounds like there are specials during the week for the regular Joe patrons and the tourists. What's going on with the catering? Has it really impacted the catering as well?
Yeah, we're looking to grow the catering business. And about changes, we've been adding new items to our reception menu. Like, Jenny came in fourth in the Bacon Fest competition out of 24 contenders.
Wow.
Recently, so that item went on our menu very quickly, and it was really enjoyed, and it was great. It was Jenny, you tell her.
Yeah,
tell us
about Bacon Fest.
Sure, Bacon Fest was awesome. It was like the first week that I got here, so it was kind of crazy. Just moved down, started Bacon Fest, and we did a flatbread. It was a flatbread with bacon onion jam and a chiffonade of spinach with a balsamic reduction. So it was super delicious.
It sounds it.
Now it's on the menu.
No, that's great. And what do you have summer hours, or is it, what are your hours over at the Silver Boat?
Yesterday, Joan, thank you for asking. We just went to summer hours. We're expanding the hours. We're open every day. Instead of closing at 6 like we do off season, we are open till 8 Monday through Saturday, except on Sunday we close at 6 instead of 4. We're really excited. Our dining room was filled with crew from cruise ships today using our Wi-Fi, and our pastry case is just filled to the brim with cookies and granola bars and almond joys. We have new pastries coming out. We have a double chocolate banana bread that's brand new.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. So you could maybe fake yourself out and say, oh, this is healthy for the kids, but double chocolate sounds really great.
Right, it's got banana.
Yeah, exactly. It has something. Something that grows on a tree or something like that. That sounds great. So you're open early in the morning for the breakfast crowd, then mm-hmm. you have the lunch, mm-hmm. and then at night you serve beer and wine at night, or maybe during the day too, I have no idea.
Yeah, if you come in at 6 in the morning, you could have a beer if you really just come on the plane and you're jet lagged, flying from Tokyo or something. You can have a beer. We serve beer the entire day that we're open. We're not, we're not really known to come to the bagel shop to have beer and wine, but that does give me the opportunity to talk about our upcoming wine bar.
Oh, great. Go ahead.
Okay. This fall, we're under renovation, and we're turning our hotel lobby into a wine bar.
Oh, how fun. Oh, that's great.
We're really excited. And also, I've been thinking about that for a really long time, and having Jenny here in the kitchen and sort of settling things and letting me have the space in my head to think about doing new things and having the confidence that once we start it, we'll be putting out good food.
Yeah, that's
so moving forward this year.
That's what I was thinking about. I wasn't thinking that, oh, the bagel is beer and wine, but if Jenny's putting out some new stuff, it sounds really interesting, like that Bacon Fest entree was just like, oh, that might be really nice with a glass of wine, you know?
Definitely.
After 6 p.m. since we're open till 8 now. So
that is a good idea.
But let's talk a little bit about the wine bar, and then I have a few more questions for Jenny, and then we're out of time. So what does that mean? Like, when you say a wine bar, what do you have in mind? What's the vision?
I guess in my head, I think of, like, Vinovolo in the airport. It'll be pretty simple. It'll be in the lobby, so it'll be intimate and small. Have it where you can buy a flight of red, a flight of white, maybe some nice carafes, some half bottles, some small menu items that'll come out from our kitchen. And that's pretty much it. Simple, just a nice place to go for a glass of wine in the evening time.
Yeah, it sounds really nice. It sounds really nice. So, but that's going to happen in the fall right now. The menu is expanding, and the catering business is in full tilt. And, Jenny, anything else you want to talk a little bit about Le Cordon Bleu? I mean, your experience there? Like, did you wake up as a kid and say, I want to be a chef, like, you know, attended, you know, or did it?
Oh, no, I had no idea. I had a career before. I used to hardly be able to cook a box of macaroni and cheese.
Oh, that's inspiring.
So when I decided to go to culinary school, my family and friends looked at me and said, you? What do you what do you mean? So it was a really great experience going to the Le Cordon Bleu. I learned a lot of stuff, which you know, I was able to take into commercial kitchens, and under chefs in those kitchens, I learned even more. So everything has just been going up, up, up. But speaking of Le Cordon Bleu, we have a new head baker who is also Le Cordon Bleu trained. So I'm very excited about that and having him work on some of our bakery pastries and getting some new things out also.
That sounds great. That sounds great. Well, welcome to Juno. Julie, have anything to add, or do we cover everything and then some?
And then some. Thank you, Joan, for having us. So we're looking forward to a really fun and festive and delicious summer.
Yeah, and then what is it? Taco Tuesdays tomorrow. So it sounds
Taco
like
Salad Tuesdays.
Taco Salad tomorrow. Got to check that out.
Yep, there's an avocado dressing and some seasoned grilled chicken, and it's all Jenny's creation.
Oh, it sounds yummy. It sounds yummy. I'll see you. I might not see you, but I'll be up there soon.
Good, good, good.
Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Hello. Here we are, Juno Afternoon, listening on KTOO. If you've missed a portion of the show and you want to check it out at ktoo.org. Tomorrow, we've got Alita Buss and Katie Spielberger talking about Mudrooms, which takes place tomorrow night, a preview of this week's jazz and classics performances by saxophonist Grace Kelly. Leslie Thompson will be here to highlight the ADA Access Survey, and we'll be talking with teacher Ben Carney and some award-winning National Ocean Science Bowl students. That's tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Martha Moore will be the host of that show. And as far as the weather, tonight we have rain showers, patchy fog, wind 10 to 20 miles an hour. Tomorrow, patchy fog in the morning, rain showers, highs around 50. Tuesday night, rain showers, lows around 40. Wednesday, mostly cloudy. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy. Thursday night, cloudy and rainy. Anywhere from 40 to 50, 58 degrees. That's the forecast here in Juneau. So thanks for listening to Juneau Afternoon. Sorry about that technical difficulty, and have yourself a great day. We were just listening to Dan McElrath playing the Alaska flag. Next up, Grace Kelly, Juneau Jazz and Classics musician.
Dishonor them when we turn things like this into a political circus.
President Obama's response to critics over his administration's handling of the Benghazi attacks. It's Monday, May 13th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.